Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from Longmont, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Well, it has been a little while since I have hosted an episode, and a couple reasons for that. I was away at the beginning of January. I went down to the Caribbean, had a wonderful trip with my daughter and some of my Slacker friends. We went on a cruise for a week, starting and ending in St. Martin, and then we went over to St. Bart's for a week, where we rented a house and just kind of chilled out for a while and just had a wonderful time. So I apologize if it's been a little while. I also really only like to release episodes when I have something to say. And one of the things I was thinking about recording was our trip down there was quite interesting. We were flying down, I don't know if you recall, but there was a stoppage of flights in and around Venezuela, and the entire Caribbean airspace was closed. So we had a real challenge, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about how we managed that. There were 10 of us that were going to the cruise ship, and a few people had gone down early, so they were already there. And it was 7 of us were traveling down the day before, and that was the day of the airspace closure. We did not think we were going to get there on time, but with persistence and some travel hacking techniques, I guess you would say, we were able to all get there and get on the ship, on board in time to have a great time. And the only casualty was one of our group members, their luggage did not arrive before the ship left the port. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but they were able to get compensated for that. In the end, worked out. So we were very happy about that. But it was quite trying at times. And maybe I'll do a whole episode on that because there was some things I definitely learned through that process. The key one is be diligent and keep trying, and usually things will work out. Don't just give up, which I think a number of us had thought about doing at one point. In this episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about credit card rewards. It is something that I strive to be good at, I guess you would say. And there are various techniques on how to maximize your awards points and redeem them. But there have been some pretty big changes, especially in the higher end cards, so the ones that really focus on travel, and those being the Chase Sapphire Reserve, the Capital One Venture X, and the American Express Platinum card. I have all three, and I'm going to go through them a little bit. But first, I want to say a few caveats. First and foremost, playing the credit card rewards game only works if you pay your cards off in full every month. So if that is not you, I would skip this episode and focus on getting your card balances down to zero before trying to play this game, I guess you would say. I will talk about at the beginning a few things that you can do if you're new to the space, I guess you would say. If you, let's say, just are a college student or someone who have just recently graduated and gotten your first job, I'll talk a little bit about how you can start accessing credit and building your credit to be able to potentially benefit from some of these reward programs down the road. So we'll start off there. So feel free to listen to that part. But again, it is imperative that you pay these cards off in full every month. And literally, I would say, whether you're playing the points game or not, because the interest rates are so high on credit cards, you want to pay those balances off in full. I view the credit card much like a debit card. I make sure I have the money to pay the card off always, just like it would be if it were a debit card and the money was coming out of my bank. at each transaction. Instead, it's just coming out in one bulk transaction a month instead of each time a transaction is made. And the way that you can set this up so you don't miss a payment and your cards are paid off in full is anytime I open a card, I immediately sign up for automatic payments, statement balance in full. And I track these very closely so that the money is certainly in my checking account when that bill comes. And the other thing is, you want to be using these cards only for purchases that you would have ordinarily made. You don't want to try to get points by spending money that you wouldn't ordinarily do and rack up bills or buy things you don't need. So I only use the cards for things that I would have already paid for. But at the same token, I use my credit cards for all of my purchases as much as I can. There's very few purchases that I cannot put on a credit card. And again, paying them off in full, it's just like a debit card. So that's the caveat. I just want to address, especially since I just came off of the release of the 6-part financial literacy series that was previously published on the podcast, and it was directed towards high school students or those potentially early in their saving and investing timeframe. One of the things I do talk about in the class is a little bit about how credit cards work and things like that. So I would say that if you are interested in establishing credit, getting your first credit card is certainly something you would want to do to help establish that credit. Again, as soon as you get that card, set it up for statement balance in full, automatic payment. So again, use it like a debit card. And the ones that are usually easiest to get if you don't have any established credit are cards like the Discover Student Card. It's this card issued by Discover for students, and they expect you not to have much, if any, credit history. Now, the credit limit is going to be very low, but that is a good way to establish credit. Another way to establish credit is if you have a parent add you as an authorized user on their credit card. Most credit card companies will report that on the authorized user's credit report, and that will help build credit. So that's something that a parent could do for a child. You could even potentially issue the card, but hold it and not even give it to the child. I know people that have done that, and it just helps build credit without the risk of that child taking that credit card and going crazy with it, for example. So that's another way to establish credit. And Discover in general is usually easier to get a card from. So even if you have established credit, a credit history, credit file, but it's not very long, usually Discover is going to be a little bit easier to get than some of the other cards. Now, the other cards I will start mentioning are assuming you already have established credit. In some cases, it may need to be a long credit history as well as a very high credit score, especially those premium travel cards that I will probably be spending most of my time talking about. The next kind of order after you maybe have your first card and you've gotten some established credit is you could decide instead of getting points and trying to redeem them for travel, you could just simply get a cashback card. And there's a couple that come to mind that I think are fairly easy to utilize, and you don't really have to think a lot because you're just going to get a flat rate cashback. So going back to the Discover It card, for example, they have revolving categories. So every quarter, there's a new category. Maybe it's online shopping or it's groceries or maybe gas or something travel related. And you will get 5% cash back in that category. And it usually is subject to an upper limit. So it's not unlimited purchasing in that category, but you would get 5% cash back. And the way it works is that cash will not immediately be issued to you, but it will be sitting in your credit card portal, and then you could use it for statement credit, or you could just simply ask them to send the money back to your linked checking account, for example, that you use to pay your bills. Or you could just say apply to statement credit, and then it will just reduce the balance you owe that month. So that's an easy one. But then you have to kind of think about, well, which category am I spending in? Or you could just say, I'm not going to worry about it. And whatever the category that is, that bonus category, I'm just going to get 5%. And then you'll get 1% on everything else. Another option is to use a card like the Citi Double Cash card, which gives you 2% cash back on everything. So very simple. Anything you charge, 2% cash back. And that's it. And you do it the same way. Cash accumulates in your credit card portal, and you can ask them to send it to you or just use it as statement credit. Very simple. So that's kind of the easy button when it comes to credit cards. And again, using them like a debit card and just getting 2% cash back is a nice thing. And those cards, the Discover It, the Discover Student, and the Citi Double Cash do not have an annual fee. So that's great. No annual fee card. 2% cash back or 5% rotating categories, and super simple. Chase has a similar card. It's the Chase Freedom Unlimited, and it is a 1.5% cash back card. So not quite as good as the Citi Double Cash, but still good nonetheless. Also a no annual fee card. So that's another option. And some people, like myself, I really do like the Chase ecosystem, and we will talk a little bit about that. So I will marry, in essence, my Chase Freedom Unlimited card, earning 1.5% back, or which is effectively 1.5 points per dollar spent in the Chase ecosystem, and then I can move it to another card and redeem it for travel or things like that, or just redeem it for cash. So super simple card, kind of another easy button card. So those are the ones to think of as starter cards, I guess you would say, or beginning the journey into rewards. And then we start to move up in the categories. There are hotel cards, there are airline affiliated cards, and then there are overall travel cards. So let me quickly touch on airline and hotel cards. Just very briefly, most hotel chains will have their own cards and most airlines have their own cards. And the way I like to think of it is it could be, often is, beneficial to have a card from the airline that you may fly frequently. So if you fly a specific airline frequently, I'm in the Denver area. I fly out of the Denver airport and we have a lot of flights from United and Southwest. So both of those cards can be advantageous to have for a couple of reasons. So I'll start with the United card. It's a Chase card, but it's Chase United Mileage Plus or whatever. And they have different categories. I'm not going to go through them all, but they usually have kind of a basic card and then an intermediate card and then a premium card. And so the basic card may give you a few perks like free baggage and discounts on in-flight purchases. And if you buy your airline tickets on that card, instead of getting 1 point per dollar, you might get 2 or 3 points. And then they have an intermediate card and it comes with some extra benefits. And then a top-end card is usually includes lounge access or something like that. But if you're flying these airlines and you're paying for baggage fees, having one of those cards could, in essence, pay for itself in very short order because it usually covers bags not just for you, but anyone that is on your ticket that you paid for or at least partially paid for with that card. So that can add up pretty quickly. And most of these cards, at least the starter ones, are usually somewhere around $100 to $150 a year in its annual fee. So just a few bags will cover that. So that's something to consider. Sometimes they'll give you, like the United card may give you 2 lounge passes a year, or it might give you an upgrade to Economy Plus from Economy once or twice a year or something to that effect. Southwest also has a full litany of cards. I think there's 4 different ones. On those, you can also get free bags now that you do have to pay for bags or so if you have that card, you get free bags. You also get earlier boarding. Now that they've gotten rid of the old boarding process and moved to the new one, which is very similar to most other airlines, you will get priority boarding. When you sign up for them, there is a sign-up bonus. And that's the case for all of these travel-related cards. You need to spend a certain amount of money in a period of time, usually something like 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, something to that effect. And it's probably going to be the higher the number of points they're giving away, the higher the spend requirement is going to be. In some cases, it might just be $1,000. And oftentimes, it's $3,000 or $4,000. And if it's a business card, it could be tens of thousands of dollars. But most of the travel reward cards are going to be somewhere in that neighborhood of a few thousand dollars to spend over 3 months to potentially 6 months. And you will get in the neighborhood of 75,000 points, 100,000 points, maybe even 150,000 points on occasion. So that's worthwhile if you are, for instance, like I am, charging all of my expenses on cards. It's usually fairly easy to meet those initial purchase requirements. Or if you know you're going to have a very large purchase coming up, maybe you're doing some landscaping or buying some furniture. Again, only if you're planning on spending this money does it make sense. But if you have a big cost coming up, and it could even be something like college tuition, that maybe the college accepts credit cards, but there's no credit card fee associated with paying the bill, because that's the other thing you need to look out for, is making sure you're not paying a credit card fee to use your credit card. That's a pretty easy way to satisfy these initial spending requirements. So keep an eye out for that. And that's, you know, obviously beneficial to get those points and then to be able to utilize those going forward. Those are kind of how the airline cards work. I like to have one for an airline that I may frequent, and I can justify the fee because it's paying for my baggage, or I value the early boarding, for example, or maybe another perk that comes with the card, whether it's a lounge access or something to that effect. So again, I like to look at what I'm getting for the card. Obviously, the initial bonus points are very valuable for that relatively nominal annual fee. And you could cancel the card after your first year, but I would not cancel it within the first year, because many of these card companies do have the ability to claw back those bonus points if you cancel within the first year. So you always want to wait until after the first year before you consider canceling the card, for example, or downgrading to a different card. I won't get into the details on that, but that is another option. On the hotel cards, I only have one. I have a Hyatt card. And that one gives you automatic status at Hyatt. It's a fairly low status, but it does include a few perks. It's the Discoverist status, which is the first status level, I guess you would say. It does include room upgrades when they're available. It gives you like 2 water bottles and things like that. But it does give you a free night per year. So I use that every year. I make sure I use that free night. And the annual fee for that card is $95, I believe. And the night that I'm reserving, which is a night that I would have purchased anyway, is more than the value of the $95 annual fee. So it's worthwhile. It's kind of like I view it as a prepaid night credit card. So that's something to consider. And some of the other chains, in my opinion, their points aren't as valuable, but Hyatt also, when I got the card, it did give me some level of points if I spent a certain amount of money. And I don't think it was a huge amount of points. It was probably somewhere around 40,000 points, but I didn't have to spend that much money. It might've been $1,000 or something. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. Those 40,000 points, in many cases, could buy as many as 5 nights. And I think right now they're doing something where it's, you don't get points, but you get free nights. Something like 5 nights free or something like that. I thought I saw that recently. Somebody was telling me that they were looking at that card and that's what the offer currently was. So instead of points, it was number of nights. And I'm sure there's some expiration date on those nights. So you'd have to make sure you were going to utilize those nights. That's kind of how the hotel ones work. So now let's move to the general category of cards, travel related cards, I guess you would say. And a few come to top of mind. So the first one, I think, is kind of, in my opinion, the easy button, especially if you're near an airport with one of their lounges. And that's the Capital One Venture X card. I view it, as someone who travels in and out of Denver frequently, a no-brainer card. And here's why. That Capital One has their own lounges, and they are really, really nice lounges. And I've been to a number of them. We have one in Denver. I've been to the one in Dallas-Fort Worth. And I've been to a few others. I can't recall all the locations off the top of my head, but every single one has been very, very nice. Now, they're so nice that they became very, very popular. And here's where the newness of credit cards comes into play. All of the major high-end credit cards have made some pretty significant changes. Capital One made it some changes. They weren't as significant as the others, as we will discuss. But the Capital One used to give you access to the lounge for yourself as the card holder and two guests. Now, the lounges are so nice that they were starting to get quite crowded because of this benefit. And a lot of people were signing up for the Venture X card so that they could get lounge access and were bringing in guests. And I know that I've flown out of that airport with a group before, and each one of us or many of us had those cards and we were each bringing in two guests. So I, you know, unfortunately contributed to that issue, I guess you would say. And they have now, as of February 1st, eliminated the guest passes for the card. Now, what's going to happen probably is some of those guests who previously came as a guest on somebody else's VentureX card may end up getting their own card. You also get Priority Pass lounge access. So that's a lounge system that is a kind of a membership thing that comes with your card that you have access to lounges, and many of them are in international airports. And so they may be lounges that have different names, but they're all part of the Priority Pass system. Prior to February 1st, you would get access for yourself and two guests. Now that's just the card holder and no longer guests. Now you can pay for those guests. I think in the Capital One lounge, it would cost you $45 to bring a guest in. In the Priority Pass lounge, I believe it's $35 as a guest. So that's hopefully going to alleviate the crowdedness situation in some of these lounges. But that would require more people to have their own card instead of going in as a guest. Now, that card is interesting because it has a $395 annual fee. However, another benefit is you get a $300 a year travel credit, but you have to book that travel through the Chase Travel Portal. Not a big deal, but you would just go in their travel portal and book, let's say, a hotel room. And until you spend $300 on travel-related items, book through it, they will just keep giving you credit back until you hit the $300. So in my mind, as an avid traveler, it's pretty easy to spend that $300 on things I would have ordinarily paid for. So I view it as a net $95 annual fee card because of that. And the $95 is easy to justify because each year you get an extra 10,000 points. And typically points are valued at a minimum of a penny per point, so that's worth $100. So effectively, that pays your annual fee. Literally, you could cash it in and pay your annual fee for that, or the $95 of that annual fee by cashing in those 10,000 points. That's not how I would utilize the points, but that's how you could do it. They also give you, if you book through Capital One, they will give you 10 times points on hotels and rental cars. They will give you 5x points on flights and vacation rentals. And then everything else is 2 points per dollar spent. So it's kind of like a 2% cashback card, except for you have the ability to get some more points in certain areas and also use those points for more than just cashback. So it's kind of a pretty good card there. Now, the other cool thing prior to February 1st, which has now been taken away, was you could have an authorized user on your account and they would get the same benefits to the lounges, for example, that you had, even if you weren't with them. So my daughter was an authorized user on my Capital One Venture X. But as of February 1st, in order for her to retain the ability to go into the lounges herself and me not have to pay for her as a guest, I would need to pay $125 a year for that authorized user. I've chosen to do that, but eventually I think she will likely get her own card and get those benefits. There are some other benefits if you were to spend more than $75,000 on this card. For instance, you would get the two guests free for both the Capital One Lounge and for the Priority Pass system. I'm not sure that's worth spending $75,000 on the card to just get that. But if it's your only card and that's what your spending level is, that is a benefit that you would receive. So I think it's a pretty good card, especially if a Capital One lounge is in the airport that you frequent. So I kind of view this as a given for me. Then the next two cards start to get a little bit more pricey. And those are, well, let me back up. Before I get to those two, there's one card by Chase. It's called the Chase Sapphire Preferred. Now, Chase has two Sapphire cards, the Preferred card and the Reserve card. And we'll talk about both of them. But the easy button, if you want a Sapphire card, would be the Preferred card because it only has a $95 annual fee. And you get a pretty good number of perks. So it's not a bad card to have for travel purchases if you don't want to go kind of on the high end, which is the Reserve card. And we'll talk about that card in a little bit. But the Preferred card is interesting because, like I said, $95 annual fee. And again, you'll probably get somewhere around 75,000 or 100,000 bonus points for spending, I don't know, $3,000 or $4,000. So, you know, all of these have those sign-up bonuses. This one, you would get 5x points if you book through the Chase Travel Portal. We'll get 2x points for travel-related items not booked through the portal. You get a 10% bonus on your points every year. They give you a $50 hotel credit. You get 3x points on dining, so that could be very interesting if you're eating out quite a bit. You get 3x on online groceries. You also get a $240 DoorDash credit. It probably comes in a monthly amount. You get DashPass membership, 5x on Lyft, 5x on Peloton, and 3x on streaming. So there's a lot of categories where you're going to get more than, let's say, the 1.5 points per dollar on the Chase Freedom Unlimited. And so there's a lot of opportunity to potentially get more points per dollar spent than on the flat rate, whether it's the Capital One Venture Exit 2X or the Chase Freedom Unlimited 1.5 or the Citi Double Cash at 2. So it's a good card to consider unless you want to move up to the Chase Sapphire Reserve. So let's talk about that one. This is the card I have. And again, same kind of sign-up bonus situation. I think right now they're probably running at around 125,000 points. I don't know what the spend is. I'm going to put the links to these in the show notes. And a caveat on that is it's a referral link. So if you do use the link, I would get some points as a result. It's usually like 10,000 points for anyone that's referred and it's capped out. But if you have a friend or relative that already has this card, ask them for a referral link and they will get the referral points for referring you to the card. Now, make sure that that sign-up bonus that you would be eligible for through the referral link is at least as good as what it would be if you just did it on your own. Sometimes when there's a new offer that comes out for more points, it doesn't come through as on the referral links right away. So just be aware of that. Always look for your best sign-up bonus. And if it's the same, whether you were referred or not, always try to use a referral from a friend or relative, or feel free to use the ones I'll put in the show notes. The Chase Sapphire Reserve is a $795 annual fee, which might sound pretty steep, but there are a couple things that you could benefit from that quickly whittle away that to potentially zero or even a benefit number. So the first one is, there is a $300 travel credit, very much like the Capital One Venture X card, but instead of having to book it through their travel portal, it's just any travel-related item you spend on, you will get that credit back. So you could book a flight directly with an airline, book a hotel directly with a hotel, buy a bus ticket, whatever. It's going to code as travel, and it will automatically come back as a statement credit until you hit the $300. So quickly, as long as you're spending on $300 of travel a year, I view it as it's not a $795 card, it's a $495 card because I can easily satisfy that $300 statement credit. So that's the way I look at it. Now, before we get to what I would call couponing, which is how both Chase Sapphire Reserve and American Express Platinum, which I'll also talk about, have changed their system to you're getting a lot of these kind of special credits, but you have to be a little bit proactive to utilize them. Oftentimes, you have to sign up for them and activate them and make sure you're kind of consciously looking at what's available and utilizing it, but you can get a lot of credits. It's kind of like having a coupon book and having to use the coupons that expire every year. But before I get to that, let's talk about the kind of bonus categories. So anytime you book through the Chase Travel Portal, you'll get 8x points. So that can be quite advantageous. If you book flights directly with the airline and not through their portal, you would still get 4x points. So that's pretty good. Same with hotels, 4x points booked at hotels directly. And dining is also 3x points, just like it is with the Chase Sapphire Preferred. And then it's 1 point for everything else. So that's pretty much the bonus categories. So Chase also has their own lounge system. They're the Chase Sapphire Lounges. So if you have the Sapphire Reserve card, you can go into those lounges for free and bring two guests. So they did not eliminate the guest feature like Capital One did. So you still can bring two guests in with you. So that's a benefit. So look around, see what your airport has or your airport that you tend to fly at. See if it has a Chase lounge, and that may kind of sway you to want to potentially have this card. You also get access to that same Priority Pass lounge system that Capital One gives you, but you also still get two guests, whereas Capital One got rid of that. Now, here's the couponing, and I'm going to go through this because there's a lot of them, but I think if you look at them, you may find a few that benefit you that you may already be paying for or would have paid for anyway that kind of justifies the annual fee or whittles down that annual fee from the $795, now $495, to a lower number. So they have hotel stays called the Edit. You have to go on their website and see what the hotel is, but you get $250 twice a year credit towards those hotels. Sometimes there's a minimum stay. I'm not sure if this is the case with Chase. I know it's the case with Amex where you need to stay at least two nights. That might be the case with Chase. You get an annual dining credit of $150 twice a year. And for instance, we're going to use that. We're going to Camp Fire New York and we're going to use that there. You have to book through, I think it's OpenTable, to get the reservation, and as long as you pay with your card, you get the credit back, statement credit back. You get Apple TV and Apple Music for free. So if you're paying for that, that could be a benefit right there. You get $420 in DoorDash credit. I think it's credited monthly, and there's some caveats with that, so look into that. $120 at Lyft, and that comes in the form of $10 per month. $120 at Peloton also comes in the form of $10 a month. $300 at StubHub. So if you buy tickets to events, and I've used this credit already, comes twice a year, $150 twice a year. So like from January to June, and then from July to December, for example. You also get what's called primary car rental insurance. So if you rent a car with this card and something happens, the Chase insurance associated with this card is primary. You don't have to go through your own insurance agent first, and then whatever's left over the card covers, it's considered primary insurance. So that's beneficial. Now, all these kind of high-end cards also include things like global entry and TSA PreCheck once every 4 years and things like that. That's just kind of given with all these higher-end cards and even many of the airline cards, for example. But the other thing that you get, if you spend over $75,000, which again is a pretty high hurdle, but if that's where you are, I think this card has the best benefits when you exceed the $75,000 limit than the Capital One card or, as we'll get to, the Amex Platinum card. At $75,000 in spend, you get a $500 credit at Southwest to buy flights, for example. You also get what's called A-List at Southwest. So that means you can buy a cheap ticket and you automatically get better seats. And within, I think it's 24 or 48 hours of the flight, you can upgrade to extra legroom if they're available. You also get $250 at the Chase shops. It's a shopping portal through Chase. I wouldn't buy anything through there other than use the credit. But like, for instance, I need a piece of luggage. I'm just going to get basically a free piece of luggage with my $250 credit. And it also gives you IHG Diamond Elite status, which I believe is their highest status. So many of these cards will give you some of these statuses at car rental companies and stuff like that. So you definitely want to look into that and sign up for them if they have it. So that's kind of the Chase card. So between all those kind of coupons, the $300 travel credit, the extra points for certain categories, to me, it's a justifiable expense to pay $795 and get it back through these various forms. Now, what you're doing is you're getting points in the Chase ecosystem. And I really like their points partners, because what happens with these points that you accumulate in the portal is you can redeem them on Chase through their travel platform, but you can also transfer them to partners. But not everyone is a partner with every card. So you kind of got to look through the list of partners that these cards have. For instance, Chase has some really good partners that I like to utilize. One is Hyatt. So frequently, I'll be moving my points from Chase to Hyatt at a 1-to-1 ratio, and then booking a room at Hyatt using points. And that's like a no-brainer. You tend to get a really good redemption rate for those points at Hyatt. Not so with many other hotels. So you'll find a lot of people that have the Chase cards will typically be talking about staying at Hyatt, and that's why. Then the other two transfer partners I think are super beneficial are United and Southwest. You can move points from your Chase portal over to United or Southwest and book flights through them. And that's usually the best way, in my opinion, to use the points, is to actually move them to the transfer partner and then utilize them at the transfer partner, as opposed to booking something with the points through Chase. And the reason being, let's say you booked a flight, you booked it through Chase, and something went wrong. A lot of times, you know, let's say you were booking a United flight, United might say, well, you need to talk to your travel agent, which is Chase. But if you were to have moved the points from Chase to United and then booked the flight with United and something goes wrong, you've now booked it directly with United. So if there's any issues, you just need to talk to United. So I like that better. They also have a number of international airlines, but Capital One also works the same way with many transfer partners. They have a lot of international airlines. So if you're going to fly internationally, Capital One or even Amex might be a better choice. But again, you just want to go through and see what all the transfer partners are and see which ones are most suitable to you. So if you're flying domestically frequently, the Chase ecosystem may be better. In some cases, Amex, I think, might be, I want to say Delta's transfer partner. You'd have to check me on that. So that could be beneficial. And I think that might be a recent partner. But I find that American Express and Capital One are really good for international transfer partners, whereas I find Chase to be a little bit better on the domestic side, particularly United and Southwest. So let's now jump to the Platinum card. This is the Amex Platinum card, and they're in direct competition with Chase Sapphire Reserve. They kind of went back and forth this summer. Chase Sapphire Reserve came out with a new points system, this whole couponing thing, raised their annual fee a lot. And then Amex answered and said, wait a minute, we're supposed to be the premier card on the block. We're going to do one better, in their mind, not to us as users, but to them. And they decided the Amex Platinum card is now $895 a year. So they were like, well, forget you, Chase Sapphire Reserve at $795. We're going $895. There was some talk of it being potentially as much as $1,000. I'm glad they didn't do that. But I still have this card and I still use it. But it's a little bit harder to justify that annual fee. I'll go through some of the categories. They don't really have as many points boost categories, I guess you would call it, or points multiplier categories. They do give you 5x points on flights, and that's just booked directly with the airline. So since I have both of these cards, I will typically use that one for flights because I'm getting 5x instead of 4x. I'm still fine with 4x points, but if you have them both, might as well get 5x, right? Same with hotels, but you do have to book those hotels on their travel portal to get 5x points. And then it's really 1x for everything else. So it's really not that great, in my opinion, other than for flights. And you're just getting 1x for everything else. So it's really about the coupon book for the American Express Platinum. Now, you do get lounge access to the Centurion lounges, and that's Amex's own priority lounge. But again, it's just for you, no guests. You have to pay for guests. And I want to say the guests are like $50 there. So not as beneficial. you do get a number of credits, and there are a number that I use, and so therefore have been able to quasi-justify the annual fee. I'm still a little bit on the fence on this one. This would probably be third on the list. So Capital One, like I said, would be number one because of the lounge in Denver and the low effective annual fee after the travel credit. The Chase Sapphire, I would either go preferred or reserved, depending on how you want to use the card. Preferred is an easy button, low annual fee card, still gives you a pretty good number of travel perks. And the reserve, if you're going to use a number of those benefits in a kind of coupon book, you could justify that one. And also it does give you their lounge access, which their lounges are also pretty nice. So let's talk about the coupons at Amex. So they also have a hotel credit. It's their Fine Hotels and Resorts credit. It's $600 a year. I think it's $300 twice a year, kind of like split the calendar in half. I am going to be using that coming up. I'm going to see Phish at the Sphere in Las Vegas. So I hunted around for a hotel that I could use this credit at, and it dropped the price. I did have to book for two nights, but I was going for two nights anyway, so that's fine. So effectively, it's paying for one of the nights, and it also comes with a, let's see, breakfast is included, which normally isn't with that hotel. It gives you $100 either per stay or per night, I'm not quite sure, credit at the hotel, which you could use for restaurants, which is what I plan to do, or if you wanted to go to the spa or something, you could do that, which I'm not going to do. I'll just use it for food. And then it also gives you automatic upgrades, early check-in, late check-out, things like that. So I'm going to use that. They give you $200 a year in Uber credit, and it's usually credited monthly. I think it actually is, I thought it was $15 a month, but maybe it's $20 a month. I'm not sure exactly. You get Uber One, so I think you can enroll in Uber One, and they basically pay for it. They give you a $200 incidental airline fee, but you have to choose the airline. So what I do is I chose United because I tend to fly United. And normally it would be for things like Wi-Fi or food that you purchase on the plane. You can't use it for seat upgrades. You can't use it to buy tickets. However, there's a workaround. You can buy United Travel Bank cash. And the way that works is you go on United, you buy Travel Bank cash vouchers, like two $100 vouchers, and it codes as an incidental. So you'll get the credit back on your credit card. And then that is sitting in your United account. And since it's travel cash, you can use it to buy flights. So that's kind of a workaround there. It does give you Clear Plus. So you can enroll in Clear Plus and it'll pay for it. You also get a Resi credit. So that's like their restaurant credit, I guess you would say. It's $400 a year, but it's $100 a quarter. So actually in New York, we're going to Camp 5. So we made a reservation as a Resi restaurant so that we can utilize that credit. You get a digital entertainment credit. And I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal online. And I want to say it's like $40 a month. And it's a lot of money. I'm happy to pay it because I really appreciate what they do over there at the Wall Street Journal. It's what I read every morning. So I'm willing to pay the $40 a month. But the $25 digital entertainment credit, as long as I use this Amex Platinum card to pay for my Wall Street Journal, which I do, I get the credit back, $25 a month towards that $40. So I use that, no question. Here's the one my daughter likes. It's the Lululemon credit. So you get $300 a year at Lululemon, which is $75 a quarter. And she was not with me to be able to buy something. I didn't know what she wanted. So I said, well, let me just go in the store. I'll buy a gift card and we'll see if it codes properly. I think if you buy a gift card online, it won't work. But if you buy it in the store, I think it does work. Well, I know it works because I did it. So I bought a $100 gift card to give her for Christmas and Amex gave me $75 back. So nice. And she has vowed to make sure she utilizes that credit throughout the year. So that will certainly get used. You get Walmart Plus. So that comes as a statement credit back. If you enroll in Walmart Plus, you also get $100 at Saks, $50 twice a year. I've never used that. You get a $200 Oura Ring credit. So if you buy Oura Ring with the card, you get $200 back. You also get a $300 Equinox credit. I'm not sure exactly how that works, if it's like $25 a month, but if you go to Equinox, I guess you get that credit. And like I said, you get the Centurion Lounge. Now, if you spend more than $75,000 on this card, all you're going to get is two guests in the Centurion Lounge along with your own entry that is included with the card. So again, if you're going to spend a big bucks on a card, I would say the Chase Sapphire Reserve gives you the best benefits at the $75,000 level. So I am going to leave it there for the travel cards. Quite a bit there. Another podcast I really enjoy. I have no affiliation with it, but if you really want to dive deep into this stuff, All the Hacks is a great podcast. I'll put the link in the show notes, and I've learned a lot from there. And I have also learned a lot about how to utilize these points in the best way possible to get the most benefit. What I have found personally for myself is that I will often find good flights domestically where I may buy an economy ticket with a pretty low points requirement. Like I said, I'm going to New York and my daughter and I are both going and we're flying on points and it was pretty cheap. I want to say it was like 13,000 points each way or less. Yeah, I think it was even less. The cool thing about points is when you book airline points is that you can always cancel them and they just automatically get put back in your account. So I think initially my flights, because we booked it two different times, my flights were, I want to say it was a 26,000 points round trip plus $5.60. So there's a ticketing fee of $5.60 each way. So I paid like 26,000 points round trip. And I want to say that ticket, I don't remember how much it was, but it wasn't inexpensive. So it was a pretty good points redemption. And you're always looking at, well, what would the ticket cost in cash versus how many points or how much am I getting in points redemption in essence? How many pennies per point am I getting for this redemption? And then hers was, because she booked it at a different time, quite a bit more expensive. I want to say it was like 40 or 50,000 points even, something to that effect. And she had the points. So she booked the tickets. And then later, we saw that the prices changed. The points redemption prices changed. So we both canceled our flights and rebooked them. And now we're each going for 20,000 points round trip. So the cool thing is when you book with points, you can always change your mind if you want to just not go and just get the points back. Or you can make changes where, in this case, the price went down and I was able to cancel the flight and rebook it immediately with points. I also did this last year. We went to French Polynesia. And this is where I like to use points for international flights. I typically would like to fly premium economy, which is kind of like a first class seat, but not lay flat, international. And if it's an overnight flight or a very long flight, I really like to get business class tickets if I can. And that's where you get a really good points redemption. So for instance, we were flying from Denver to French Polynesia. And I was able to initially book a flight for 65,000 United points from Denver to San Francisco, San Francisco to Papeete. PPT is the airport code, in case you're wondering. And literally the day before, I think it was 1 or 2 days before, Abby and Victor, friends in the FI community, were over here and said, well, how much does that flight cost these days? And I was like, I don't know, let me look it up. And it was previously for business class, it was 170,000 points, which was more than I was willing to spend. And I don't even think I had it. And it had gone to 85,000 points. And I was like, whoa, look at this. It's only 85,000 points. And I paid 65 already for premium economy. Let me just cancel and rebook it. And that's what I did. So I was able to fly business class lay flat in those Polaris seats, which are beautiful. And you get lounge access and all kinds of stuff. So super good way to redeem points, especially for international flights, is to look for those business class flights. And I've been getting better at doing that. And again, a result of listening to podcasts like All the Hacks and using different kinds of websites that help you figure this stuff out. Two that I use, one is point.me. And the other one, which I am now gravitating towards more because I think it's a little bit better, is pointsyeah.com. And you can put in what kind of points you have. You can search by whatever points you have. You can search by any points partners. And it will even tell you things like, well, if you have Chase points, you can use these. Or if you have Amex points, you can use these. And it'll even walk you through on how to do the transfer. So they're really good websites to kind of figure out how best to utilize your points. Because once you move your points over to one of these transfer partners, you can't move them back. So you want to make sure you're utilizing them appropriately. So for instance, I was going to the Baltics in August, and I had a British Airways flight over and an Air France flight back. And I changed my mind. I'm still going to Norway now, which is one of the stops where I was going to go, but now I'm going from the north of Norway to the Arctic Circle, so on this expedition trip. And fortunately, I did have to change my flights, but I was able to still book another British Airways flight and another Air France flight to satisfy where I was going instead of going to wherever I was going. Where was I going? Copenhagen. I think I was flying home from Copenhagen and to Stockholm or something. And now I'm going to Oslo. So it was pretty easy to just cancel those flights and rebook them with the same points that I had available. So that worked out great. I have a situation now where my daughter and I were going back to French Polynesia next year as part of this trip, but she's unsure whether she's going to be able to go. But I said, well, we should just buy your flights to make sure, because what happens is these award flights, especially for business class, open up about a year in advance, and there are only so many award seats available. And as you get closer and closer to the time of the flight, those points redemptions, if they're even still available, often get much more expensive. So we were looking at flights to go from basically the West Coast, because we can get ourselves to the West Coast anywhere, right? From Denver, no problem. So we were looking for flights from LA and San Francisco. And there was one that opened up on Air Tahiti Nui, which is interesting because I've never flown them, but they have a 787 Dreamliner that they fly daily from LA to Papeete. And they had a redemption for business class lay flat of $75,000 on their website. Now, there was no way I was going to be able to get points over to them directly, but they're a partner with Qantas. And Qantas, I could move my points from, I think it was Capital One and Amex. So I was able to move points over to Qantas and buy us both tickets. Now, the downside is if she decides not to go, I will cancel her ticket. I've learned that I can't just cancel the ticket because it would cancel both of us. I have to separate them first, and then I can cancel just hers. It's a whole nother extra little step, but apparently it's pretty easy to do. But those points will just go back into my Qantas account. I can't get them back to my Amex or Capital One account. So I need to be sure that I can use them somehow. Now, they're partners with American and a couple other airlines that I should be able to book flights through Qantas on other airlines. But again, you have to be careful about getting your points trapped at these different locations if you're not going to be able to utilize them. And they, in some cases, do expire. Some airlines' points don't expire. Others, it's like 2 years. Some are 3 years. But you could easily do a very low transfer, like 1,000 points, to re-up that expiration date. So I do have a little spreadsheet that tracks all this. Probably wondering how I do it. I have a spreadsheet that tracks all these things. And so I am conscious of where all my points are because I have had some points trapped in a good way because let's say I canceled one flight and rebooked on another flight, but I got it for less points. Well, that means the excess points, while they're available, are there at that airline rewards account. So they're kind of stuck. But hopefully I'll use them in the future. And again, I got them back because I got a better price, so all the better. Anyway, so that's kind of how all this works. This kind of got into Travel Rewards 201 from 101. I hope you enjoyed this. I was talking to somebody today. We had an event over at the, what is now renamed the Fi Collective, by the way. I think I'll do an episode on that because it's the Mr. Money Mustache headquarters here in Longmont, which is now the Fi Collective. And we have new memberships. It used to be you were just a local member, but now we have remote memberships and we're doing things like Zoom calls once a month and things like that. And we had our first last month. It was kind of fun. And we even had a remote member that drove all the way out from Iowa, which was awesome for today. We had a meetup and I was like, you drove from Iowa to a meetup? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, are you doing something else? He's like, no, I just drove here from there for this. I'm like, how far is that? And he said, 13 hours. I was like, wow, good for you. But he's a remote member and wanted to come check it out. So anyway, maybe I'll talk about that in another episode. This has gotten a little long. So hopefully you enjoyed this. There was somebody there today that said, please publish that podcast you were thinking about because I told her I was thinking about doing something on this subject. So here it is. There you go. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Like I said, I'll put some of the links in the show notes. And who knows what I'll talk about next time. Maybe I'll come back around to the little story about our travel adventure in the airport when they closed the airspace in the Caribbean. Until next time, enjoy this wonderful weather we're having here in Colorado, and hopefully you are too. I know the Eastern Seaboard has gotten some rough weather. I know we're flying out there, and hopefully it's gotten a little warmer once we get there, but enjoy February. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend the show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.